Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com.
Get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast.
Over 150,000 titles to choose from for your Android, iPhone, Kindle, or MP3 player. This week on Out Now with Aaron and Abe, we're talking Finding Dory.
I heard there's $1 million reward.
You just have to keep swimming.
Wait a minute, I forgot my introduction.
We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hi, hello.
Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I discuss new movies weekly. We cover some various movie topics, jump into a mostly spoiler-free review, and then jump back to other fun movie topics. This is episode 244.
Pretty close to 245. I don't know if that's going to be a special episode, but probably not.
Okay, yeah. We'll see. But yes, 245 is where we are, and this week we are talking Finding Dory. The sequel to the 2003 hit Finding Nemo, of course, from Pixar. And joining us today to talk Finding Dory, we have from Endor Express, he hopped a ride with Crush to get here. It's David, yeah?
Cha, dude.
How you doing, bro?
I'm good. It's going to be totally sick, this podcast.
Okay. Well, yeah, good to have you back here.
Thank you.
And we have some special guests and stuff later on as well to talk about some other aspects of this week's topic. But let's do some show note stuff here first. First up, new commentary is coming. There is a plan set for this week to record one, and you will soon know what that thing is. Why I need to tease that all the time? No idea.
Yeah, I was like, I agree. All right.
What else? Banner contest. We've had a banner
contest. We've had some submissions.
We've had some submissions at this point. Looking pretty good. And we need a new Facebook banner for our Facebook page. Which I'm going to get back to in a second here, actually. But the banner contest currently, if you want to make us a new fun banner that's acceptable for all ages, that says Out Now with Aaron and Abe on it, that's some kind of image, maybe related to the summer in some way, like summer movies in some way. That'd be a lot of fun. The one that we like the most will be picked out and used as our official Facebook banner for a certain amount of time, and that winner will get some kind of prize in the mail, some kind of Blu-ray prize.
An electronic pat on the back.
Yeah, that too. But yeah, that'd be a lot of fun. We're going to probably end it around the end of this month, around the end of June, so you still have a couple weeks here. But yeah, that's what's going on right now. Speaking of the Facebook page, Abe and I are aware that there are apparently problems with the mobile functioning of our Facebook page, it seems.
Right.
Some people it doesn't seem to be loading the timeline, which would explain some of the lack of feedback in recent weeks. So we're going to try and figure that out. We're not sure exactly.
We're keeping our tabs
how,
on it.
As of yet, but yeah,
monitoring it.
Yeah, so we're going to try to see what we can do in that regard. Let's see. Abe.
Yeah.
I have a new thing that I want to start every now and then.
I'm curious about what this is.
It is called Favorite Movie Editions.
Favorite Movie Editions.
Yes.
Tell me more.
I will. So as you recall, for our 150th episode, you and I, as well as Brandon and Scott, I believe, we went over our favorite films of all time.
Mm-hmm.
That was our big thing for that, our 150th episode special. Well, huh? that's obvious a list that can grow over time, I'd say is fair. Not necessarily in terms of like the ranking or what have you, but in terms of like movies that you would want to consider your favorite movies of all time.
Huh?
Yeah?
This is true.
Uh-huh. And so I see a lot of movies. I think about the movies I see or what have you, let's say every now and then. And I was thinking about this movie a lot, and I figured, why not have this as like a segment of the show where like if either of us or even a guest has like a new movie that they want to add to like their list of favorite movies, why don't we just announce that?
That's a good point.
Yeah. So the movie I'm going to launch this favorite movie editions segment that'll happen every very so often.
So often.
The movie A Most Violent Year. This is the one with Oscar Isaac and Jessica Chastain and Albert Brooks from what?
Streaming on Amazon Prime.
It is streaming on Amazon Prime. It's yeah. From 2014 at this point, the end of 2014, from J.C. Chandor, also did Margin Call and All Is Lost. Good crime film with Oscar Isaac giving a great performance in there. I really like this movie, and I've only seen it so many times, but I kind of love this movie. Like, I really like, I want to put it into my list of top favorite films of all time, which, it's a long, you can find that list at thecodeofzeke.com actually, but yeah. Got quite a few movies there, but I'm adding that one to the list.
So that was a good movie because it was a weird time that it was released, because it was released, like what you said, late at the end
you
of...
Yeah, like end of December, yeah.
Yeah, so it was already sort of in that January phase where nobody really saw it.
It's very well done as far as a kind of a slow burn crime drama with really well done acting and what have you.
So who's Oscar Isaac more channeling? Is he more channeling Poe Dameron or Llewyn Davis?
Pacino in Godfather.
Oh, okay, all right.
Which would, I guess, be more Llewyn Davis nature, I guess.
More sad and a little bit more contemplative. Okay,
sure. Yes.
All right.
Good
segment.
Before we move on, iTunes reviews and ratings, good to get those. Helps out the show, helps other people find the show. If you want to log on to iTunes, search Out Now with Aaron and Abe, you can find us pretty easily. You can add a star rating, and if you want to add a little review in some form of a sentence, that'd be great too.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much in advance.
All right, let's move on now. Let's get to know everybody, where we try to set the tone for the podcast and better get to know everybody.
I heard Anna on that one.
It was, yeah.
But where's Elsa?
This is a Pixar movie,
a snowman.
Not a Disney movie.
Oh, whoops.
We'll get to our trailers, then we'll talk Elsa.
More right. Elsa?
Abe, I have a question.
Yeah.
For both of you guys.
Okay.
What is your saddest Pixar moment?
How define that?
Well, obviously Pixar is the studio that can deliver both laughs and some solid drama. And there are moments that I think many people share that are fairly intense emotionally or what have you that can bring you to, kind of a sadder state or just, seeing a certain character go or come or what have you. Like, it makes you feel, a certain amount of emotions. What would be your saddest Pixar moment?
I don't know about saddest. I mean, it certainly is up there. I was actually just talking with a couple of buddies over dinner yesterday. It was about Bing Bong in Inside Out.
It's completely a sad moment.
It is, right. But, I mean, there are other moments in Pixar film history that are also, on the level of allowing yourself to have a nice stream of tears running down your face and not be ashamed about it. But Bing Bong came up yesterday, and that was the most recent memory, so I would go with that.
David?
I have two. The first one is from The Incredibles when Mr. Incredible Bob is trying to convince Elastigirl not to join him in the fight towards the end.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because he's just not strong enough to lose her again. And I just thought that was such a heart-wrenching realization for us, for him, because he's supposed to be the strongest man in the world and he can't, emotions are just more powerful than he can handle. So that was one. And the second one would be in Finding Nemo when Nemo's hearing the story from Nigel the pelican?
Yes.
About what his dad has been going through trying to get to him. And I just thought that was such a, it's not an obvious, sad moment. But to me, that was just kind of like an emotional, oh my God, that's just so sweet.
And I that really those choices.
And it really got to me rather than, but.
We'll get back to thoughts on Finding Nemo because we're obviously talking Finding Dory, but Anna and I we watched Finding Nemo before we saw Dory actually, and as you've chosen a moment that it's less, as you said, obvious, but I do look at that Dory moment where Marlin is about to, he feels his son has died at this point in that movie and he's about to leave Dory, and Ellen DeGeneres is Dory, she tells him how she remembers more stuff when he's around, and she doesn't want him to go, and that's a really solid, just dramatic moment for that film.
They were gonna get married after the movie.
But
was a very sweet moment. Yeah. I agree.
The studio has a bunch of these moments scattered.
They do.
We could all lead on Up if we wanted to, but I don't necessarily need to. To narrow it down, that point in WALL-E when things could happen poorly, but they don't, it's kind of a double hit where at the one point you think, well, WALL-E might not gain this back, but then it's oh, WALL-E does gain this back. That kind of gets me.
Which part was that?
It's at the end when they get back to Earth, essentially, and
that movie could have ended so many different ways. It could have ended when Eve actually hit her target and he just dies.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. that's definitely a way
it could have ended. That just made me sad right there.
But, there's that, I call it this a lot, but Toy Story 3, obviously, towards that end,
With the incinerator?
But it's not just the fact that it's the incinerator. It's the kind of the various things that are going through my mind as is happening. One's like, I can't believe this movie's got me to the point where I'm going to be emotional about whether or not Mr. Potato Head survives. The other is...
He'll taste kind of, the best, though.
What?
He'll taste the best out He'll of all taste of them. The best.
But, I mean, there's a look on, which I even have as like one of my wallpapers that shows through. It's the look on Buzz's face where he's like resigned to the idea that we're not going to get out of this. Not even I, Buzz Lightyear, can help us. So, Woody, you're just going to have to take my hand and we're going to have to let this happen. Like, that's the craziest, like, for plastic toys to make that happen. It's like, that's pretty incredible for that.
They're real, man. They're real.
Yeah.
There are a lot of very tender and emotionally charged moments in a lot of Pixar movies.
Well, the other one, which I think falls in the less obvious category, is more just my reaction to what, because I think I called it this before too, but when A Bug's Life came out on Blu-ray and I hadn't watched A Bug's Life in a while, which isn't like my favorite Pixar movie, it's fairly low on the list, but it's still a good movie. But like you have Flick, who, like, Dave Foley doing a great job as that character. Like, the whole movie, he's just getting, like, beat up upon. Like, everyone's telling him, like, you have terrible ideas. Don't do this. Don't do that. You're not useful to us. It's like, he's just trying to help. Yeah. At the very end of that movie, after they defeated the grasshoppers, and, like, they're all standing around, like, what's her name? What's the princess's name?
Ada.
Ada? Is that Julie Louis-Dreyfus?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
She walks up and she's like, why don't we give a hand to Flick, who's like, you know, helped us through all of this. And they all start applauding. And there's a point where I'm like, oh, that's so great. Like, he's just been trying to help the whole time and you're finally acknowledging him. Thank you.
I mean, the queen knew that he was a good guy. She had that.
There was that scattered number of people, including Hayden Panettiere, who didn't say, we're going to win state, but did say, Flick, I'm going to help you. And ran away from, like, Hobbit.
That was Hayden Panettiere?
Yeah, she's everywhere when she was in 1998. That's what was happening. She was remembering Titans. She was running away from Kevin Spacey. It all happened. And then she was in A Bug's Life. All right, so...
Yeah.
Abe, what's your question?
Question for everybody here. When you guys were young, were you afraid of the ocean?
Was I afraid of the ocean when I was young?
Mm-hmm.
Abe.
No.
Of course, yes. I feared the ocean because I have respect for it. But that didn't mean I didn't jump into the ocean all the time. I love the ocean.
I love the ocean too, but I was a little bit afraid. I didn't want to go beyond waist deep.
With Tyrese?
Exactly, because, you know, he's my baby boy.
So. The ocean was coming too fast, too furious for you?
Yes. But one of my first experiences in the ocean was over in San Diego, and we went boogie boarding, and I was probably like 8, and I was pretty afraid. I was like, wait, this isn't clear like a pool. I can't see all the way through.
Of course you were afraid of the ocean. What were you doing?
Boogie boarding.
Yeah, what's the key prayer of boogie boarding? Boo!
Boom!
And we just lost another 10 listeners. Okay.
Wow.
But David, never afraid of the ocean, ever.
I mean, not really. No. I mean, I knew the power of it. I knew that I could die, but it wasn't something that was, you know. I think it's different because we're all West Coasters and the ocean's just always been there, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, we respect it, but we're happy to embrace it.
Exactly.
True that.
Yeah, true that. Exactly. That's the hashtag true that on the ocean. That said, I mean, on and out, we're in SoCal, and we were at Huntington Beach yesterday. I always know if
it's my favorite beaches.
Huntington Beach or Huntington Beach. This is a, you know.
It's soft tea. It's Huntington.
Hashtag soft tea. But, you know, we're aware that there are sharks, apparently, around the area.
Yeah.
And there are a lot.
And we walked out on the pier, and Anna was very much hoping that we'd not only see sharks, but what else were you hoping?
I was hoping to see a shark jump out of the water, just like in the trailer for Shallows.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So and to give like a visual. Like that's, I wanted to see a shark jump out of the water.
Good callback to last week. Callback.
Yeah. Okay.
But you can still, you know, listen to that podcast as well on iTunes.
Thank you. But yes, I mean, obviously the odds were stacked way high in her favor to see a shark jumping out of the water. But we did see dolphins. So, you know, there you go.
Well, there you go. I mean, those are the nicer ones.
Yeah. Some would argue that's even better than sharks, but
yeah.
All right. That's how you play.
Know everybody.
All right. Let's move on now. Let's get out of quickies.
TM.
Each week out now. We be there. Tweet cookies.
TM.
Abe.
Yes.
Have you seen any other movies this week?
I have. I watched Central Intelligence.
Oh yeah.
Yes, and it's a funny movie. There's not a whole lot of plot to it, and it's kind of, you know, there's a little bit in the middle where it's a little slow and a little bit meandering. But for the most part, I think what really works about it is The Rock.
The Rock is great in it. I agree.
Yeah, he saves a lot of movies. So not to say that some of the movies that he's in are bad, but he has such a presence on the screen now that it allows you to really just be with him. And the character he plays in this movie is really gung-ho about a lot of things, even though you are, you're kind of wanting to say no to something. He's always very much in the line of, you're going to do this. And so I appreciated that, and I liked Kevin Hart. I haven't seen that many Kevin Hart movies, but in this one, it feels like he's a little bit more reserved.
For sure, yes.
So
he's playing the straight man. This
exactly.
Time, as opposed
yeah,
to,
he's,
you know,
he's
the...
playing an accountant, too, which is...
pretty
game with the other movies. The Rock is the, you know, the fun party one in this movie versus Kevin Hart, who's
oh
no, yeah, he's not gay in this movie.
He is the Abbott to Rock's Costello.
But for the most part, it's a good movie if you want some laughs. And I think what really made it even more amazing was there was a woman sitting behind me, sitting by herself, and she was just laughing at all of the parts hysterically throughout the movie, and it wasn't annoying because she knew when to stop, because I think at a certain point a lot of people around her were also just laughing at her, laughing at the movie. So it was fun to see that and be a part of that. But a lot of laughs, and you know, they touched on bullying a little bit, which is good. But I think some other movies do
they handle a little lot better, I'm not as high on it. I think the chemistry between Rock and Kevin Hart are like that's solid. Like they got that down, that works. And The Rock, I agree, he's very good in this movie. This might be one of his best as far as like straight performances go. Like I
yeah.
might be so. And I remember describing this when we talked about the trailer. I remember reading about this and telling you that like he was channeling Tom Hanks in Big. Like that was the idea because he plays like
That's really yeah. That's,
he
that's,
plays
that's,
like an adult that's, version of his teenage self, just you know, right. looking like The Rock. But I feel like the ways I describe the movie is like it's one that it's definitely gonna play like on TBS forever when it comes to that point, and like it'll just kind of be on throughout the day. Be like, oh, there's that movie that I kind of enjoy,
and I wouldn't mind stopping and watching it.
It's similar to like a lot of Martin Lawrence movies from the 90s, like Blue Streak. Like I don't know why I've seen Blue Streak so many times, but it's on TBS a lot. I'm like,
you know, it's not on TBS. Black Knight.
Black Knight, yes. Or even like they used to play Rush Hour 2 specifically all the time. Like just
cut
that. Yeah, it's like that, and it's like the movie, as far as its jokes go, it's like it feels like every 2 or 3 minutes, there's like, okay, there's something that made me kind of smile, and it makes me forget about the dead space in between those minutes. That's kind of how
exactly.
I kept responding
so,
to the humor.
Yeah, because there's some physical comedy with this movie as well. It takes away from the point, the fact that there's really no plot. I mean, the plot is super thin and super contrived, but... I'm just more curious about what kind of joke The Rock is going to be making next, and kind of just what's going to happen. I mean, again, I'm curious about what he has in his fanny pack aside from flashbang grenades. So
just wait for Central Intelligence Supremacy next in like 2 years.
Can't right? wait. Yeah. The other thing that I've been watching, which is not a movie, but is OJ
Crime Story. 30 for 30?
No, American Crime Story.
You're watching People vs. OJ.
Yeah, and. There's a lot of really good performances
it's
in that.
Great. The performances are great in that show.
I've only seen about two to three episodes so far.
It just gets better. It's already pretty
yeah,
good.
I mean, we all know how the story ends, but it's very interesting to see the dichotomy of the two sides and how much race played a role in it. And
it's the way it like handles everything. And yeah, the... what's his name? Is Johnny Cochran. Courtney B. Vance is great.
Yeah.
Johnny Cochran. What's his? I think it's Sterling Hayden. I think as
Christopher Darden.
As Christopher Darden.
Yeah, those two are the ones that stand out the most to me right now.
Even John Travolta. Like I don't know what he's doing, but I did not want to watch it. So you know that happened for him. So that's good for him, I guess.
He was also a producer. So that's what I've been watching lately.
David, have you seen any of the movies recently?
Nope. I've been trying to, but no.
All right. Well, I've seen something. I saw Swiss Army Man.
Did you?
Yes. This is the upcoming indie comedy drama fantasy involving Paul Dano you know, one of my least favorite actors as a man who is kind of stranded on an island and attempts to hang himself because he doesn't know what else to do until he sees a body wash up ashore. This body is played by Daniel Radcliffe, and this body, he thinks he's saving it. He realizes it's dead until he also realizes it's kind of not dead. And it turns out this corpse has a variety of kind of special abilities, and it's kind of vegetable state. It's okay. It's very, if you've seen the trailer, you know
I've seen the trailer. And I'm very curious about how the movie is.
And I would say you should watch the trailer if you're, just by these words, you're curious, because it doesn't really spoil anything aside from just the basic setup for the movie. And my takeaway is that it is fun. Like, it's really weird, for sure. It's almost like as if someone studied, like, Charlie Kaufman movies or screenplays and, like, kind of examined that and made their own take on it. It's directed by Daniels, who are apparently the music video directing team responsible for videos from groups such as Foster the People and apparently the Turn Down for What music video, which I apparently have not seen, but is apparently visionary based off the press notes that I gave.
Okay.
But the movie is very visually inventive, so I imagine, you know, their music video work probably has the same kind of energy to it. But the movie is, I liked it, but it certainly falls in that kind of weird category. And any movie where I can like it despite Paul Dano, like, that helps right there. And he's good in the movie. Like, he's good. But Radcliffe is very good in the movie, which is, like, you have to see it to kind of understand why he's good in the movie. But it takes a certain amount of ability to kind of pull off that kind of performance of what he's what he's required to do.
Glad to hear it.
Yeah. So that one opens, I think, like, the end of this month, or, like, July 1st, maybe. It's limited release, but it's a Swiss Army Man. It's a weird one, but if you're into that kind of weird, then you might like this movie. All right, that was enough quickies.
Yep.
Let's move on now. Let's get to trailer talk. We talk about some of the newest movie trailers, when they're coming out, what we thought of it, and what have you. And, you know, we got a big Disney movie out this week, so we got some Disney trailers. And the first one we're going to talk is Moana. This is the upcoming animated Disney film. It's a Pacific Islander-based featuring a character named Moana, and actually, The Rock chiming in as her demigod sidekick, Maui. David, what did you think of the trailer for Moana?
The trailer, you know, it's you know what Disney or actually Pixar used to do is they used to give these teasers that were not what you get in the movie. And I think this almost looks like a scene that may not even be in the movie, but it might be also because you never know with these things. But it looks beautiful. It looks gorgeous. It's stunning. And they don't really tell you what the story is. They don't really tell you that much about it. They just kind of introduce the sidekick, which is interesting because here's a sidekick getting top billing to a movie. And that always kind of makes me take a step back and go like, okay, what is this really going to be about? So
I recall Frozen. I mean, I had no idea what that movie was going to be because I only saw the trailer where it's like, both of us, we were confused. It was just Olaf and Sven. We're like, what? And like, so I didn't, and I saw it like early, like I saw it like a month before it came out. So it's like, I walked in not knowing anything. I just like, oh, it's a princess movie. Oh, and it's a musical. Like, I had no idea what I was getting.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, see, that's where you make a movie look just so awful, and then people are like, oh my god, it was amazing.
It works, since it made, you know, it's Disney's biggest movie. So.
But, it's fantastic, and it's the directors of Aladdin and Little Mermaid. And
yeah, you got the pro talent involved on this one.
Yeah, and this is their first CG outing, so it'll be interesting how they tackle it.
Yeah, for sure. I didn't know what Frozen was. This movie, it has a female lead, and it's a musical. Like, it very much acknowledges the music credits.
Yeah, I think for what I saw in the trailer, it's what I heard that impressed me the most, actually. The music, that the snippet that they gave us was, I want to hear more of that. It was beautiful.
And obviously, I'm most curious about what how Weasel Town and Alan Tudyk are going to play a role in this video. That's me. Hey, what'd you think?
I enjoyed it a lot. And by a lot, I mean I enjoyed what I saw on the screen for the teaser. So I agree with David that I was kind of taken aback by the fact that The Rock is Maui and not Moana. So that it makes me even more intrigued. I'm not saying that that's a bad thing at all. I was really, really curious as to what the story is now. And I'm a big fan of these types of teases where they don't really tell you too much. And if you know the story, then great. But for people who don't, such as myself, it just makes me even more curious about it. So the animation, I'm sure, is going to be top notch, and I'm going to be pretty stoked to see that. But I'm pretty excited for the storyline.
Yeah, it I'm intrigued based off just like seeing what I'm seeing and hearing. And it's like it's really the talent behind it. I mean, you mentioned the Clements and Musker, David, who they've done some of the big Disney movies over time. And you noted as their first CG outing, so that intrigues me also to see what they can do in this kind of realm of animation. There's also plenty of, I mean, Dwayne Johnson obviously in there. That's fun. Taika Waititi is one of the writers on this from What We Do in the Shadows and the upcoming Hunt for the Wilder People, which is quite good.
And Thor Ragnarok.
And Thor Ragnarok, yes. you have music by, and this is where I'm going to try to pronounce a Hawaiian name, Opa'i Fa'oi.
We'll correct it in post.
No, I'm gonna leave that pause there. Mark Mancina and Lin-Manuel Miranda, who is achieving quite the acclaim these days. 11 Tonys last week, as Anna is making sure I'm noting. And of course, the movie's
nominated
called.
Or won.
He won. He won 11 out of 11? What, 16?
Wow.
He won a lot. That's for Hamilton. Yeah.
Nice.
But I mean, so that's a lot of big talent involved in one Disney movie, and it's a big Disney movie coming out this November. I mean, there's no reason I shouldn't be looking forward to what I'm seeing so far. It looks great. I talk about a lot in when I review Blu-rays how I love seeing snow on Blu-ray. I really like seeing water when it comes to CG animation. I've really enjoyed how water's come along in like the time since CG animations took over. Like it's a really cool thing to look at. And yeah, we'll talk about that more when we get to obviously the movies we're about to talk about. But yeah, Moana arrives in theaters November 23rd, so this Thanksgiving weekend. And there's that. Let's talk about our next trailer. This one is for Pete's Dragon. David, do you have any thoughts on the original Pete's Dragon?
I didn't really care for the original Pete's Dragon. It's I like it in a sense that most of my memories associated with Pete's Dragon is from the Main Street Electrical Parade at Disneyland.
Okay.
They had this huge Elliot float, and that was the most impressive thing in that parade. I didn't see the movie until way later, and it was not what I was expecting. And so I didn't care for it. I might return to it. This trailer looks interesting, but it's also kind of like a live-action version of How to Train Your Dragon, but in modern times. So I'm really curious what they're going to do with it to make it stand out and be its unique own thing, because that's the hard part about rebooting something that something else has kind of replaced in your consciousness. Like if John Carter didn't have to deal with all these Superman movies or all the Star Wars afterwards, it might have been really well received.
Abe?
Not a huge fan of I've actually never seen Pete's Dragon, the animated Disney classic, and I wasn't a huge fan of this trailer. That's not because I don't know the original property, but I just don't know what or how this logically makes sense. So
in what way?
Well, there's a feral boy who's 6 years old and he's coming from the forest and he's found by Bryce Dallas Howard, and you have Judge Dredd telling everybody that they've got to go hunt this dragon now. So it's like, well, the dragon can also apparently turn invisible at some points, and this is all just based off of the trailer. So it just seems a little bit like, feels like they might be trying to do too much. Maybe it's a little convoluted. I don't know. It doesn't excite me, is what it is.
And then Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. is there. Robert Redford.
Sorry. This is true. I mean, there's all these like government people there.
You know what would be interesting is if we do this, when this movie comes out, we have Abe still not have seen the original and see what he feels like incoming without any original backstory.
I have a feeling Abe will be able to not see the original by the time this movie comes out.
I'm like holding my breath to see if we actually have to review this movie as our main review for 1 week.
Right. And then if we, I've seen the original and not liked it, so it'll be interesting to see how I like the new movie.
I like this trailer quite a bit. I'm down for this movie. I am very interested to see where it goes. I like the look of the dragon because it's neat and different. The storyline is generally intrigues me. I've seen movies about feral children coming out of the woods before and having to deal
Mama.
With society. What? Yeah, Mama. That's a good example.
Mowgli.
Mowgli, yes. But I mean, I've seen this. I don't know what's confusing about it to me. I mean, it makes plenty of sense in my eyes. You got, you know, the people bringing him out, trying to adjust into the real world. There's something that helps him stay alive or whatnot, which apparently is a dragon. And the dragon looks neat to me.
Who taught him how to speak?
And you have that one character, Carl Urban, who's like, nope, can't accept it, which is pretty typical for this kind of movie. So he's pretty straightforward in my eyes. And I like that David Lowery is doing this, who directed Ain't Them Body Saints. And he did something right because he's tapped for Peter Pan next. So, I mean,
another Peter Pan movie?
Yes, Disney live action adaptation of Disney's Peter Pan.
Wow.
But, I mean, either he's really easy to work with or he's just made a great movie and Disney's happy about it. But, I like this cast. I mean, you have a lot of good people here. Everything about it, I'm not going to say it's, you know, going to be the favorite movie this summer, but I think it might be kind of a sleeper hit. I'm looking pretty happy at it, especially when it comes to remaking a movie that's not very good to begin with. Peter Dragon's not like a well-renowned classic Disney film. I tend to think it's easier to accept that when it comes to remaking those kind of movies, because it's not like the stakes are all that high. So yeah, Pete's Dragon, I'm looking forward to it.
All right.
Yeah, we should tell 8, though. It wasn't animated. It was just partially.
Just the dragon was animated.
Oh, just partially. Okay.
It's
a live-action movie, but Pete's the only thing that's
animated. Pete's the only thing that's animated in there.
I mean, actually, no. Elliot's the only. Elliot is the only thing that's animated. He's the dragon, not Pete.
Elliot's the only. Yeah.
Elliot.
Yeah. It predates Who Framed Roger Rabbit, and there's less noir.
Fewer acid baths?
Yes. A lot fewer. Is Elliot in Who Framed? I'm trying to think. Is there a giant dragon that flies by at some point in
The Reluctant Dragon is back.
Well, what?
The Reluctant Dragon.
The Reluctant, okay. All right. Well, Peach Dragon arrives in theaters August 12th, 2016. So this summer, late in the summer. All right, let's move on now, guys. Let's get to our main review for Finding Dory.
Hello? Did you hear that?
What was that? Hear what?
Stan, I heard someone say hello.
Yeah, there's a lot of fish here. Anybody, literally anybody could have just said hello.
Hello? There.
Where am I looking?
There.
Oh.
Hi, I'm Dory.
Yeah, well, where are your parents?
Hi, I've lost my family.
Where did you see them last?
I forgot. I was looking for something and I... Okay, totally get it. Date night. I suffer from short-term memory loss. It runs in my family. At least I think it does. Where are they?
Dory, there you are!
Guys!
Look out!
Ah!
Oh, look at this.
Our friend got taken into whatever this place is.
It's a fish hospital.
I feel fantastic!
Listen!
Alright, that should have been some of the trailer for Finding Dory. 13 years ago, Pixar hit gold with their biggest hit at that time, and still, adjusted with inflation, still their biggest hit, and the film that cemented them as basically the best studio around at that time, Finding Nemo. Now we have Finding Dory, the sequel, which brings back Dory, Marlin, and Nemo, and throws them into, spoilers, Nemo didn't die, and throws them into a new adventure. Set a year after the first film, Dory gains enough memory to remember her parents are out there somewhere, and the trio go on a mission to find them. It takes them to an aquatic rehabilitation park that is totally not evil, where all kinds of adventure ensue. David, where are you at with the Finding Nemo series, and with that first film and now the second one?
Wow, you're starting with me an awful lot today. I really enjoyed it. I kind of went in not sure what to expect because Pixar, for me personally, has not delivered a great, great, great film since 2010's Toy Story 3. And I was really worried. But this film really delivered in expanding the world. It's not as original, of course, and I don't think it can be, so I think the expectations are slightly lower in that regard, but they gave us a sequel that really just extends the story and gives us new characters, and it gives us a unique spin on the original story, just the way Toy Story 2 did for Toy Story 1, and I really liked it. I loved it, actually.
Abe?
Finding Nemo, the 2003 Finding Nemo, that's one of my favorite Pixar movies ever. It's actually probably one of my top 10 movies ever, too. And I liked Finding Dory. I didn't think that it was, like David said, I didn't think that it was ultra mind-blowing when Finding Nemo first came out, but I did like the way that it was basically set 1 year after, so it wasn't an extended period of time or, you know, too much time hadn't really passed by.
Fish don't live that long, yeah.
don't tell that to Pixar. They're gonna
they know that's why they said 1 year ahead.
They're gonna milk this for super long. But I liked how they gave you new characters to be introduced to and to follow along. So Crush is in the movie, sure, but he's kind of just a very, very minor character because there's not really much else that you probably need to know about Crush. He was pretty fleshed out in the first one. And I'm a big fan of the Hank character. I think that Hank really brings a certain sense of he's their straight man in this movie. And everybody else is kind of just doing their own little wonky things. But I'm glad that they did go on this adventure that essentially allows you to see Dory's side of things in parallel with Nemo's thing. So you have these two plights of people trying to either find themselves or find more out their past selves, which I thought was a pretty clever way to do it. There was never really – the animation in this didn't really stun me as much as it stunned me in Finding Nemo. And the music score didn't really hit me as hard as Thomas Newman's original in Finding Nemo either, although they reprise a few of the songs. But for the most part, I thought that it was fine. You know, it wasn't Toy Story 2, I don't think, in terms of being compared to Toy Story 1. But I think that somebody mentioned it on one of our Facebook comments or one of our, I think it might have been, I forget who, but it does feel like a Monsters University versus Monsters Inc. kind of thing.
No.
I liked Monsters University. I didn't think that
it
was.
I did too, but I don't think they're even remotely close to each other.
Interesting. We'll get into that. But okay. Yeah, those are some general thoughts.
I first have to ask, did you guys stay till the end to see the post credits?
Yes.
Okay, good. That's I'll leave it there. But everyone should know that hasn't seen it yet, they should definitely stick around to the end because there's significant things that happen.
Yeah.
I am still with Abe as far as finding, and I believe David as far as Finding Nemo being pretty high in the top. I mean, it's tied for first for me as far as Pixar films go. I absolutely adore Finding Nemo. I think it's a great film. Finding Dory obviously needs to. I expect it to be good just because I expect Pixar to deliver good things, and I, you know, expect movies to be good in general. I don't want to go in thinking it's not good. But, you know, it's a high peak to climb if you're trying to get as good as Finding Dory or Finding Nemo. So Finding Dory, it doesn't quite get there, but I still had a really good time with it. I think it is a very good movie. It's very fun. It's very lively. It has a great, you know, cast that, you know, matches the old characters with some new ones that I think are very well inspired. I agree that Hank, Ed O'Neill, as Hank is a very fun character that's, you know, kind of...
So what exhibit are you from?
Wait, I'm from an exhibit? Which one? I have to get there.
Oh, that's a hard one, kid. Unless... Nah, never work. It's too crazy.
What do you mean? Just tell me. I'm okay with crazy.
You know, I could see that. Well, there's one thing I can think of to help you get to your family. If I just take...
Yes! Great idea! You take me to find them. Why didn't I think of that?
No. If I just take your tag, I can take your place on the transport truck. Then you can go back inside and find your family. All you have to do is give me the tag.
What tag? There's a tag on my fin.
How could you forget you have a tag on your fin?
Oh, no. I'm sorry. I suffer from short-term memory loss.
You don't remember what we were talking about?
Mm-mm.
What he adds to the film is something that clearly Andrew Stanton and the filmmakers they saw something in what we can do with an octopus or a septopus as it is in this film, as far as kind of using it as not just kind of a plot device, but it's something that's fun to kind of see travel around the various parts of the film because it can use its camouflage ability. I thought that was very clever. The main story in general, you're putting Ellen DeGeneres' story up as into the forefront. Who's, you know, it's her story this time around, where you have Marlin and Nemo, they're kind of their side characters essentially. And she does a good job of, they do a good job of giving her a story to work with that, you know, it uses the short-term memory thing as a mechanism for the plot here. And I think it works. Like it manages to incorporate a lot of kind of flashbacks to her as a young fish. And you get a sense of like of what it is to kind of see this character go through their life having this condition and what that means in a way where in the first film it was used somewhat as a comedic device. This film it's used as an emotional way. And it works. It can be seen as an interesting commentary on children with special needs, which I thought was interesting. I thought that was a neat way to kind of tackle something like that. And it plays well into how she develops as a character in this story. I guess it holds itself back is that the first film, there's a spark in the dialogue that I really enjoyed. There's a lot of kind of back and forth that made me like appreciate it even more. Like, oh, I was already happy seeing the animation. You know, anytime I get to see Albert Brooks in a movie, I'm pretty happy because I really like Albert Brooks. But and just being a Pixar movie in general, I was already happy. But you know, listening to the writing, and I believe the screenplay was nominated for for an Oscar. There's some really strong like dialogue work in that film that I really enjoyed. Where I think this film, as funny as it is, I think it comes up a little lacking in that aspect. I think it doesn't have.
Aaron, yeah. Just to add to that, I think the beauty of the first writing is that you had a character played by Albert Brooks, and in this one, you have someone who just doesn't remember anything.
Yes,
it's really hard to give that person any dialogue at all. That is unique, and I think they did a job with such a limited character from the outside.
I could agree on that point, but I would say, I mean, as far as the kind of, you know, if I'm seeing another film in this universe, the kind of the spark from that film, it's hard to recreate that. I can appreciate the effort put into making, you know, Dory work as a main character, but I mean, I can't say that it, you know, matches what I really enjoyed about the first film completely. I'd also say, I mean, the new location that we're in for a majority of the movie, it's fun, and there's a big joke in there that is a lot of fun every time it gets repeated. As far as the host of this park, it's just inherently funny for whatever reason. Compared to having the wide ocean, it feels a little limited as far as kind of what we're seeing. I mean, it's neat to see kind of a rehabilitation park like this, seeing, you know, the various, you get to see a lot of different kind of, I guess, parks within the park or whatever, exhibits or what have
exhibit,
you.
Exhibit, yeah.
And it's, you know, it's a neat step, and it does a good job of not retreading a lot of the same stuff that the first one does. It really tries hard not to do that, actually, besides obviously having some minor beats that can't help but feel similar.
Mm-hmm.
And but no, I really enjoy the movie. I think there's just a few things that keep it from, you know, achieving that kind of golden status, but it's still a very good Pixar film.
Yeah, I agree. And I essentially, it's not The Good Dinosaur. And
oh yes, you know, we've gone greater than The Good Dinosaur.
Yeah, and not to say that The Good Dinosaur was terrible, like what we discussed on that podcast. It's not that Pixar makes terrible movies, it's just that it wasn't as good as some of the other ones that I have seen and ones that they have made in the past. So it's not on that level. It's better than that. Finding Dory is better than The Good Dinosaur. But I agree with you that, you know, the Marlin character in Finding Nemo, I think that you felt his anguish and his concern for Nemo because of what happens in the first 2 minutes of the movie. So you definitely feel his his contemplative nature as a father in that movie. Whereas in Finding Dory, I don't know if you have, like, she's trying to keep herself together for the sake of trying to find her parents. But I don't know if it comes across as strongly as it does in Finding Nemo. So I agree with you on that.
I mean,
I wanted to say that the first one is such a traumatic experience for a parent to lose their child, and you have the juxtaposition of Nemo being safe in an aquarium, and then the father figure who is scared of everything, traveling the entire ocean. And it's just one of those. That's why that one works.
Well, it's
that,
I mean, it's, you have that whole opening, you know, the prologue essentially as well, that really sets, it helps set up the stakes of why Albert Brooks needs to be the way, why Marlin is the way he is.
Right.
And what it means for him to lose something like that.
Right. Whereas and for this him movie, to make that journey, it's more of an interesting story premise.
Yeah. I mean, I would argue
this one,
the plot of Dory is a little more episodic than Nemo. Nemo, it's very, you know, it's a linear path and you get what needs to keep happening, where Dory, I mean, the plot's a little, it's a bit jumbled, honestly. Like, you get to a place and there's a lot of starts and stops because it needs to keep giving you new things to see as opposed to getting Dory to where she needs to go just by kind of, almost kind of like Inside Out, and how I think there's a lot of things that randomly come up to stop them from their progress there. But that's a different story.
I mean, Finding Dory is basically a different variation of a road trip movie.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah.
And to get to the kind of, that emotional through line that works for Finding Nemo, Dory, obviously, yes, it's not any better for a child to lose their parents and not remember them at all. Like, that's also traumatic in a way, but the immediacy set up by Nemo feels stronger than by Dory.
Mm-hmm. And I will say that Pixar casting, they find adorable voices. So that young Dory, adorable laugh. And
it's generally just like the child of one of the directors,
exactly,
the writer.
That's exactly what I was thinking. I think this is probably some guy's daughter.
I think Squirt from Crush's son is Brad Bird's son, I believe, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
like, it's just
so
like,
Yeah, I'm a big fan of them kind of just, you know, sort of keeping it in the family kind of thing, but also they do a really good job of really making you really love some of these characters. So,
well, also,
Young Dory was amazing.
I mean, Abe, the Sea Lions, that's a Wire reunion right there.
I know.
Idris Elba and Dominic, we have
we'll get to that in games.
And Stringer Bell as the Sea Lions.
Yeah, and I agree with you on the repeat of characters. I'm glad that they didn't repeat characters. And the reason why is you don't want it to be a Xerox copy of the first movie, because then I just don't think that's Pixar's formula. And I'm glad that they don't do that. And I think that's kind of the reason why they don't do a lot of sequels, is because you already have this original idea. If you want to expand on it, then sure. I mean, Cars 2 is a rare exception in which they kind of expand on it even further than, you know, it's almost the opposite.
Cars 2 is like it's the kind of the outlier as far as Pixar's sequels or prequels go, where it's completely different from what the first one is.
Yeah. But like, if you think about it, it's almost like the opposite of Finding Dory and Finding Nemo. It's almost as if they had Finding Dory first, and then they made Finding Nemo, which expands on it. So in terms of Cars 2, but you know, it's a good way to show you that things don't have to be the same. From movie to next movie to sequel to the third one in the series. And
well, yeah, as much as some people want to maybe comment on maybe the abundance of Pixar sequels, because there have been quite a few at this point, between three Toy Stories, two Monsters,
Inks,
two Cars, two Nemos, and a third Cars coming next year, I believe.
And an Incredibles in 2018.
And another Incredibles, yes. I mean,
and another Toy Story.
And yes, another,
oh, that's right.
Another
yeah.
Toy Story. I mean, and let alone all the little skits and what have you. They as much as some may not be as fond as the concept of doing multiple sequels, there does seem to be an effort to differentiate all of these different various sequels. There's something different going on in each one of them that doesn't make it seem like it's too familiar in that same way. Obviously, something like Toy Story, you have what is essentially an ensemble cast, so you need to repeat a lot of the same characters, but those movies happen to also be, you know, amazing, so it doesn't really hurt it too much.
Right. David, I'm curious about your thoughts on your gasp when I compared it to Monsters University.
I think Monsters U is a good college movie for kids, but it's also the most, you know, kind of just the most forgettable at the same time. I find it, you know, less enjoyable. You know, I find myself paying attention less when I repeat watch it, whereas many of the other classic Pixar movies are just, I watch them again and I'm just so, like, awe-inspired by how well it works and how good it is. And Monsters U is just kind of like, I mean, you kind of take it for granted, too, because it's just a sillier movie, and it's just...
It feels like an easy layup. It's like, all right, we can take these characters, make them a little younger, add some jokes, and we're done. Like, it takes a lot more than that, and I completely respect that process, but, you know, for Pixar, it feels pretty minor.
Right, and I think the ending of Monsters U was definitely worth...
Oh, yeah,
you know,
that
helps. It was a great ending for a... kind of a mediocre movie, to be honest.
That's what brings it above certain other Pixar movies.
Sure.
I don't remember the ending.
Yeah, I mean, it hits some emotional peaks and goes to the real world and does some neat stuff. Like, it works.
I'll have to go revisit that. But, I mean, the comparison isn't so much that the tones are the same. It's just more that it's a follow-up that isn't bad, and it kind of just spells out some more about the characters, so I enjoyed that aspect of Finding Dory.
I would say I'm curious about that because I have various thoughts on this. The movie, it's, how do you think it's, does it start out well, would you say, or does it start out kind of slow?
Are you talking about Dory?
Dory, yes.
It starts off with the very baby Dory, right?
Yeah.
And then it goes to the reef where they all live, right?
Yeah.
I think it starts fair enough. But
I think it starts out kind of fast, actually.
Okay, because I feel the pacing's kind of like it's all over the place. Like it's moving, but it's also kind of stalls, especially in the second act when it's kind of like we need to go to each different thing before we get to where we're finally trying to go. Then the third act gets really zany, and I think that's what kind of brought me not down, but kind of brought me. It's like, okay, this is never going to be Nemo because this third act, you know, I'd say Nemo's fairly grounded in the real world in that movie where, you know, regardless of things that happen, it's still, you know, fish flopping around on the dentist tray or whatnot. Like, it still feels real for the most part, where Dory, you know, things happen where it's like, okay, this isn't going on ever. Like, that's like,
right. You're not going to have an octopus in a stroller.
I get the logic where you have to, you know, bigger, you know, it's a sequel. You got to go big, but at the same time, and I also, there's a big, you know, slow motion joke towards the end. That's fantastic, especially with the song choice and what have you. Yeah. But I mean, it does, it really goes far to tread the line of like how far we can go with wackiness, I guess.
I think there's a point to be said, though, that when Pixar goes zany and crazy, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. For me, when in Up, a lot of people forget that the dogs fly planes.
Fly planes and are talking, yes.
And, you know, it's like, I loved that. The part of me was like just smiling from ear to ear of that scene, but then I was just hating that that was in this movie, in Up. Yeah. And it's just this is jumping the shark totally.
I agree with you. Like, it's the, like, I don't have any problem with kind of madcap energy. I don't dislike that. It's just that seems like that, like, that makes the, that make, as far as kind of like the legacy of the film will go, it makes it hit a bar. Like, it can't
right.
get above it at that point.
And in this movie, they kind of, the fish and the aquatic sea creatures, they kind of have a better understanding of human life than they really should. But, you know, operating a car, for example, is something, but, you know, but well,
they just kind of guess. That's really what happens.
Right. I kind of give that a pass, but I definitely, those things came to mind as well. I mean, something earlier on came to mind, which is, wow, you guys traveled the East Australian Current and all the way from Australia to California, like,
yeah,
overnight
on Crush. What?
Yeah. But, you know, some of those things where it doesn't feel as grounded as Finding Nemo. Sure, I felt those things too, and I certainly noticed them, because I agree with you that not only the freeway sequence, but things earlier on in which a giant whale shark, you know, is just hanging out over in front where all the animals are with a beluga whale right next to it, and they're just letting all the people just hang out and take photos of them, and they have these really shallow tanks, and they seemingly can't do much because they're contained to those environments.
Well, they're not trying to escape. I mean, they're not sitting
there. I agree with you, they're not trying to escape, and it's a rehabilitation center, so yeah. they're trying to fix them, yes. or kind of leave them there. But those things, it feels more limiting in that regard. So that's your point earlier, Aaron, about...
yeah, you have the big broad ocean in the first film versus, you know, just various tanks that they keep trying.
Yeah, and it kind of just feels like levels, right? So it kind of just feels like
levels. That's what I mean when it says it's episodic in that way.
Yeah. So that kind of stuff, it made me a little bit more aware of what I was watching and the quality of what I was watching. I mean, the animation's great and all, but just, again, as a piecemeal whole thing together, Finding Nemo, it touches me... on an emotional level, on you know, like a sympathetic level, an empathetic level. So this one, it is a little bit more goofy and a little bit more funnier.
I'm not gonna say I don't care about Dory finding her parents. Like, there's
no.
There's
I'm not saying that. I don't think any of us are saying that.
I don't feel like we've given much credence to that thought. That, you know, the actual journey that takes place and the, I don't know, emotional turmoil that Dory is put through, I think is effective. It's not maybe as affecting as Nemo is, but I still think it's worthwhile. Like, they found a good way to explore territory with the sequel.
Wait, no. I know where my parents are. They're in, what's it called? The place, soap and lotion?
Open ocean.
Open ocean? I know where that is. That's the exhibit located right next to, I don't care.
Easy.
If you're trying to get to the open ocean exhibit, just go through the pipes.
Through the pipes, great.
Through the pipes?
Yep. Take two lefts, swim straight, and you'll hit it.
Oh, that's a lot of directions. Did you get that, Hank? All that?
Yeah.
Great. Let's go.
I'm not going with you. I won't fit. You have to go by yourself.
I can't, because I'm not so good with directions.
Well, that's too bad. A deal's a deal. You wanted to find your parents? That's how you get to them. Now give me your tag.
But Hank, I can't go in the pipes alone. I'll forget where I'm going.
Not my problem. Tag.
Yeah, and that comes up earlier on. You know, it's very devastating when a child fish is asking people for help, and she can't remember beyond a few seconds, and the fish kind of just swim away, and she just keeps swimming because that's the only thing she remembers, and then she ends up in present day Dory. So again, it's very affecting in the way that they've set it up, and also even the seashell stuff. That stuff made me that caught me to some degree, you know, made me feel some emotion. And it was nice to see the breadth of it, just how large that seashell
in the seashore.
Section was, so that it, you know, that adds more to it. But I wanted to add something in terms of 2020 hindsight on Up, and I think that's something that Aaron has talked about too, but something that I've talked to my friends about, which is the first 14 minutes are phenomenal, but it certainly is a different movie than the rest of the movie. I'm not trying to take a dump on it.
No, but I've commented on Up, obviously, and David, you just mentioned this, but it ends with, you know, dogs dog fights on planes. But I mean, the first 14 minutes are obviously the most emotional, but the preceding like 30 and 40 minutes, it's still an old man dealing with the lack of a wife and dealing with a child and all.
Right.
Obviously,
but
the balloon stuff happens.
It's really strange movie where you have a villain who has no real motive what he's gonna do. There's like a giant colorful bird and talking dogs on this airplane that's in the sky.
Yeah, no, I agree. These are just reasons why I talk about that, you know, that kind of bar. It doesn't really pass that bar for me. I think it's a good movie and it has some great stuff in it. And the score is amazing enough, by the way, too. Giacchino's score is quite good. The movie itself, it's like, all right, yeah, I wasn't as won over as it seemed like a lot of people were with Up as a whole.
Yeah, when I walked out of Up, I was mad.
Wow.
The very first time. Yeah.
Well, I walked out of Up and went to Drag Me to Hell for Sam Raimi. It was the greatest double feature I've possibly seen that day. So
that's the one where the voodoo woman spits in her face.
Yeah, exactly. Just like an Up.
Anyhow. Yeah,
before we get to rating Dory, let's move on to another thing. Let's move on to the short film that precedes Dory, which is titled Piper.
Yep.
And I have a special guest here to talk about Piper with us.
Is it Brad Bird?
It is not Brad Bird. He was busy.
All right.
But I do have the lovely Anna Bosch here to talk about Piper. Anna, you saw this movie with me.
I did see this movie with you.
And you saw Piper before it.
I did. Everyone will.
And what'd you think of Piper?
I really enjoyed Piper. You know me, and Abe knows as well, and maybe a few listeners. I do work for a film fest when I work strongly with short films. And I really enjoy the shorts that come before the Pixar films. And this is probably would definitely be like one of my favorites. So Pixar, you know, they've been making short films for 30 years. And I think it wasn't until Toy Story when they began putting before like the Pixar movies and where people began like really picking up with like seeing the short films.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the first one people if they can remember was Jerry's Game.
Love that one.
It was Toy Story and Bug's Life, I believe, because there was a continuation of the story. And after that, a lot of people have picked up on watching these and they've enjoyed it. And they've been giving the audience more of these short films before their features. And I think it's a great idea. We do that as well at the film festival. I work at Newport Beach Film Festival. And I think it's a great combination. Piper works well with Finding Dory because it goes hand in hand with the storytelling.
It's nice when they tie in. Like sometimes the shorts, you know, they come in, they're like, all right, that was a thing that was totally, you know, disparate from what I'm about to watch.
Like lava,
yeah. It's like that has
which
nothing
is a
to
good
do with,
short.
Yeah, it's good. But it's like, what does that have to do with being inside a little girl's brain? I don't know. or like, what was it, the Luna one?
Or what about like the jumping jackalope?
Yeah, that comes before the Incredibles. Although that's about being special.
All right, I guess.
So with Piper, it definitely has a story about a little Piper, sandpiper,
bird, yeah,
the bird going out to the ocean with its mother and having to go find food for the first time. And I think it's just a clever idea and a clever story because my sister and I go to the beach a lot and we see these sandpipers just as the director, Alan, I believe pronounce his name Barillo? Alan Barillo. And I'm going to just call him Alan instead by his first name because first name basis. But he went out with his crew and they are right by the ocean where the studio is. And they noticed the same exact birds as most of us have. And they decided to put like GoPro cameras and really study the movement of these birds and everything. And I thought that was a great idea because they really show that in the short film. They really capture a lot of the feel and the movement of birds going to the ocean and running back and going back and forth, which is really fun. and also just giving like a kind of a docu-nature type of feel.
It does, yeah. It strives for kind lenses. Of like some of the Pixar shorts, like, hey, you know, they're kind of, some of them are more cartoony and some of them try to be like photoreal.
Yeah.
And I think we were kind of disturbed by this one. It was that umbrella one.
Which one was that?
Blue Umbrella, where it's like two umbrella, like one's like a blue umbrella, one's a red umbrella. Dave,
oh,
you remember
but
this
they
one?
Meet together at the end because it's the couple, right?
How could I forget that one?
Like, it's like it really went.
David
for, like,
wrote it.
It yeah.
No,
it went for like this is like it was completely photoreal. It's like this is how real umbrellas can look and like everything around it. But like they're all animated for some reason and they all have faces.
Yeah,
yeah. The music was fine. I like the music, but it's like this is kind of weird.
But, right.
But it's drive for like and yeah, that's like much like Piper, babe. The you really got to have birds that they look like the sandpipers.
Yeah, Piper. I enjoyed Piper a lot and. Part of me was actually just thinking, is this mixed real and mixed animation? Because I know that it was probably all animation, but it's come so far from where Toy Story, you know, if you watch Toy Story now, you can definitely see more blocks and more rounded circles, whereas now it's just very seamless.
And just so, a lack of, like, stuff happening. Like, that's something
in the background,
I, yeah,
right?
Like, that's yeah. Like, right, I felt that when I watched, like, something like that or A Bug's Life where it's like if this was made now like there'd be so many like bugs running around in the background the toys there'd be so and there, you've seen it in Toy Story like Toy Story 2 is a huge thing because they added dust like that was a huge thing for them when they did that yeah.
But Piper I enjoyed it a lot because the best part about it was the storytelling was in your mind you made up the dialogue yourself and I think that's one of the best things I liked about the Peanuts movie too is wherever time that you had the Red Baron with Charlie with Snoopy you kind of just made up the story on your own, and that's I love that aspect of storytelling. It's simple and it's informative and it's well done, and you can basically decide how the story speaks to you.
Definitely, I agree with Abe. A lot of the short films that are behind the Pixar features are wordless. They are very effective that way. I'll bring up Feast because that was my favorite one
from Disney. Less-
Yeah, I know it's Disney, but it's one of my favorite ones where, again, just like going on top, though, of like talking about like wordless, you know, there's nothing, no dialogue there. And it's very effective. And just giving the story tying into the feature film, it does tie in of just having this courageous feeling of overcoming fear. Because I know you guys
were talking
about
Piper
about,
again.
Yeah. Yes, we're still talking about Piper, but you guys were talking about Finding Dory. And the reason why it fits so well in front of this feature is because of it connecting that way, where it's not like totally disconnected with the film that you're going to see before. And it's because of that, the feeling of being courageous. Dory is like very courageous and she doesn't want to lose her memory. And I know the other films, like, she tries her best to you know, have her memory and not have that fear that she does have short-term memory anymore. Mm-hmm. And you guys were talking not too long ago about it, but she does go into the sewers, and I think that's her fear, right? It's going into the sewers.
Going somewhere unknown, right? Without anyone to help her.
And that allows her to forget, and that's her fear. And yeah. She does overcome it in the film, and of course with help of her friends. And this is the same thing with the short film Piper. The bird goes out, gets devastated by the ocean crashing over him, and then later you see young Piper going again to venture off into the ocean, and then there's, I think, hermit crabs, and learns from the crabs how to overcome her fear. And so it's really well done, and it has innovative technology, like you're talking about. It's very photorealistic, and it's just very, very enjoyable.
Do you guys think that Adam Sandler is going to take Dory out on a date?
Oh, is that a 50 First Dates joke?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Adam Sandler humor just get lost on me nowadays. David, what did you think of Piper?
I absolutely loved it. I adored it. They're taking the technology that they've implemented on the Good Dinosaur, the realistic backgrounds, mm-hmm. and they gave us not something that makes me go like, oh, God. You know, like in Good Dinosaur. but they gave us this really cute story of a mom and her. It could be a genderless bird. It doesn't matter what it is. Mm-hmm. But it's just super, super cute, super sweet. And, you know, there really doesn't need to be any description about it. It just
a really sweet little story and really well done, beautiful to look at. And I think it's great. It's a, it's funny because the other Pixar short that is my favorite is For the Birds. And then here comes another one that is definitely in my top five. It's also a bird.
Is For the Birds the one on like the power line?
Yeah.
With like the bird laughing at the end? Like in that, that weird laugh, like.
Yeah. It's just so stupid. It's just the way they all like the scheme against this big bird in that one.
I'd have to watch some of these again because I can't remember all of them to know my favorite one. But I do like Jerry's Game quite a bit though. I like there's a kind of like when he realizes he's, because it's just one guy, but he's checkmated himself. Like it always reminds me of
spoiler alert for real.
Yeah, sorry for spoiling the 15-year-old Jerry's Game. But it always reminds me of like Eddie Murphy at the end of Coming to America, where he's in the old man costume. He's like, aha, aha.
Joke about the soup. Where's one of my favorite spoon? Jokes to tell. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was also really happy when Jerry showed up in Toy Story 2 as the fixer.
Uh-huh.
So,
and they're just so effective because Aaron bringing up Jerry's Game because that's my favorite, and you'll see when you get back to your feedback.
feedback.
Spoilers right there. But they're so great with their technology and also just the lens and how they move the camera in these short films. Because with Jerry's Game, what I remember the most of that short film was the camera revealing that he's by himself.
Mm-hmm.
And that stuck with me for the longest time, and it still does, and it's great.
For the longest time.
Presto is a good one, too.
Yeah, I love Presto.
Well, that's the rabbit.
That's the rabbit and the magician, and it's playing all kinds of magic tricks.
Yeah.
It's better than Now You See Me.
Yeah, if we name top three, I think For the Birds, for me, Presto, and One Man Band, I think, are my top three.
I definitely have to revisit these.
I got
it,
yeah. Which are all on Blu-ray.
I don't remember One Man Band.
They have all the shorts on Blu-ray, I believe.
Yeah, I'll have to check them out. Mentioned Luna. I was like, oh, yeah, that was.
Yeah.
I forgot that was a Pixar short.
Luna's a clever one. I like Luna.
Yeah, I like that one.
It's clever.
It's cute. It's cute.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's clever. It's cute.
You did tell Bill Plot about putting a ladder on the moon and sweeping up stardust or whatever.
Your grandfather and your dad takes you out to show you what they do secretively. Like,
you don't do that?
the clever thing in that one is that their shape of their brooms and stuff are their mustaches.
That's anytime they can use doubles for mustaches, always clever. I mean, that's something. Well, Anna, thank you very much for talking.
Thank you, Anna.
Piper.
Oh, you're so welcome. I really, you know me, I was talking about this film more than Finding Dory. I really liked it.
So, would you say that Piper is more adorable?
You found yourself some humor there.
That's a good one.
That was incredible.
That should be cheated. I would. I definitely agree with what David just said. Thank you for having me for that quick moment.
For sure. Happy to have you, baby.
Anytime.
And that was Moana with.
All right. Well, let's get back to Dory real quick and rate it. When would you say people should see this movie?
I mean, I still liked it. I still think it's worth theater.
Theater? Yeah, theater. But specifically at the nearest showtime that they have at their closest theater.
Yeah, I mean,
what?
Whatever that means.
He asked me when they should see it.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, go see it right away. It's a lot of fun. It's another hit from Pixar. I really enjoyed this film. I was happy that it was an enjoyable sequel and not just kind of a middling one, you know, as it could have been.
Mm-hmm. The last 5 years.
Especially when it comes to, you know, as we all kind of seem to be noting, it's one of our favorite Pixar movies. So, you know, making a sequel to that, while Toy Story's kind of ruined that bar because they happen to make great sequels. It's like, you can only hope for so much when it comes to your favorite movie getting another one. All right, let's get to our sponsor this week. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Why Audible? Audible content includes more than 180,000 audiobooks for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or any kind of MP3 device. Additionally, Audible is offering our listeners a free audiobook download of your choice and a free 30-day trial membership. Just go to audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Choose a book to download for free and start listening. It's just that easy. audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. You get to download a book for free. You get to keep that book. You get to try out the service. If you don't like the service, you get to get rid of that service, but you get to keep the book that you download for free. So be a winner.
Read.
Or listen at audibletrial.com/outnowpodcast. Let's get to feedback here.
Feedback.
Is where we go over the various questions answered on our Facebook page, facebook.com/outnowpodcast, where, of course, you can fill in your answers to various questions we ask. As I noted, we seem to be having some problems with our Facebook page these days, but we'll be fixing it soon, for sure. Be looking into it. And let's get to our first question here. Favorite film set mainly in the ocean? Justin writes, well, Finding Nemo is probably my favorite, but Hunt for Red October, U571, not sure if Castaway will count, it's on an island, and the first Pirates of the Caribbean. Those are all good picks.
Is U571 the one with David Duchovny?
No. Okay. U571's with McConaughey.
All right.
And which one's Duchovny? Like,
didn't he do, like, some German boat movie?
He did, but that's the least notable submarine movie or something.
I don't know. All right.
I know what you're talking about. It's just like of the submarine movies. That's like that's the one no one remembers.
Yeah, that's not the one that I, you know, that's not the first one that comes to mind either. It's just curious.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Anna writes, the lovely girlfriend of Aaron says 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea and Master and Commander, which are both great picks. Next up, we have favorite animated short from Pixar or anywhere. Justin writes, Lifted. I love this one. Manish writes, Sanjay Super Team. It's rare to see my culture representation on the big screen. Jason writes, the short that was in front of The Incredibles, ahead of Bunnies, that's Boundin'.
Oh, right.
And Anna writes, Aaron's love of his life says Jerry's Game and the newest Pixar short, Piper.
I can't tell if Aaron, you wrote that part or if Anna wrote that part.
These are listener responses, Abe.
All right. None of them have been altered in any way. All right, next question we ask everybody, what is your favorite vocal performance from a Disney Pixar movie? Justin writes, Ellen as Dory is pretty great. Tim Allen as Buzz. Patton Oswalt as Rent. Rent?
Remy.
Remy.
Yeah, Remy. in Ratatouille. And lastly, Jason writes, Tom Hanks as Woody. Jason Lee as Syndrome. And John Goodman as Sully. John Goodman is a great pick for almost anything. Next question, thoughts on the trailer for Moana? Jason has, looks awesome. I will probably see it for The Rock. Justin writes, just saw it yesterday. Looks great. And lastly, Manish writes, looks like another smash hit.
Next question we have is thoughts on the trailer for Pete's Dragon. Manish writes, I have high hopes. Justin writes, interesting. Looks like a different story than the original. And lastly, we asked, favorite Kevin Hart film. Are there any fans of his aside from friend of the show and frequent guest Marcus Robinson? And Justin writes, I am hoping Central Intelligence will be the movie that will be. That movie looks funny. He has been good in other small parts in big movies he has had. Manish writes, Get Hard is so misguided and aggressively unfunny. It's almost a masterpiece. And then Marcus writes,
He wrote it in ellipses.
Yeah, which I pronounce as,
Next, we move into questions for everybody here on the panel. So, David and Aaron, feel free to answer. Nipone asks, who movie or franchises you guys think would like to see remade and franchises that should be left alone? For instance, Back to the Future should stay sacred.
Wow.
Aren't they going to remake... well, I mean, I was surprised that you just mentioned Peter Pan earlier. I'm surprised that they keep on remaking these Peter Pan movies.
Well, you know, I think the thing about Peter Pan is that everyone just wants a Disney version when they go see Peter Pan. And that's the kind of way, like, you know, people go in to see Pan and they go like, it's just not what they want. And it's like the sequels, there's a lot of talk about sequels that nobody wants. And I think Peter Pan, a variation of Disney's version, is not what people want.
It could be.
I mean, I have no real issue about Peter Pan. If they make a good movie, good on them. But
good movie is the key point there.
True. But I mean, We've had like 5 Peter Pans now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
As far as what franchises you would like to see get remade.
Goonies.
I'm fine.
Remade or left alone?
Okay, I'm answering the question wrong. Go ahead, Aaron.
I'm fine with Goonies staying where it is.
Yeah, I agree.
Rebooted?
I don't necessarily need another Indiana Jones.
it's too late for that to be left alone.
I'm just saying, like, it's not like I'm like, man, I hope they get a fifth one in there. It's like, all right. Something like Back to the Future, it's like, I'm glad Zemeckis is very stern on, like, stay away from it. Don't do anything about that. That's all I got for now, really.
That's a deep question, so it requires a lot of deeper thoughts.
Justin asks, if I were to put a cookie recipe, what is everyone's favorite cookie?
Double chocolate chip. Or black and whites.
I'm a good white macadamia, white chocolate macadamia nut fan, or a snickerdoodle. I like a good snickerdoodle.
I'm easy. Chocolate chip.
That's classic.
Yeah, okay. nailed that one, guys.
Nailed it.
Nailed it.
Let's move on now. Let's get to that was feedback.
Feedback.
What time is it now?
I think it's time for a little bit competitive game. That was a song that you guys were talking about during the slow motion sequence in Finding Dory.
Exactly, yeah.
Yeah. I've got a game for you guys this week. It's called Lend Me Your Voice.
Oh.
This game takes some of the voice actors from Finding Dory, and I'm going to read you a clue, and I'd like you to name the movie in which the other actor has voiced or lent their voice.
Wow, this sounds tough.
It's probably going to be pretty simple, except for maybe one of the clues. All right, first one. Start off with a home run hit. Idris Elba has been on a roll this year with voice acting. Can you name both movies? Or two
Zootopia.
Other? I'm going to say David. Okay, yeah, right. David.
It was Zootopia and Dory.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
I wasn't sure if Dory would be the answer to any of these.
That works, yeah. Next one. Bill Hader voices the feeling of fear in this movie about a young girl moving to California with David.
Inside Out.
Yes.
I guess I keep expecting these to be harder.
They're not really.
Okay.
Next one.
I set it up that way so I could win.
Ty Burrell voices the title character in this 2014 animated movie about a time-traveling dog.
Aaron.
David.
Aaron.
Peabody and Sherman. Mr. Peabody
yes,
and Sherman.
Yes, thank you. Like, can you give me his title? Next one. Albert Brooks voiced Jacob the Tiger in this 1998 movie.
Aaron.
Aaron.
Dr. Doolittle.
That's right.
Wow.
I know my Albert Brooks.
Yeah. Next one. Sigourney Weaver voices the ship's
David.
Computer. David.
Wally.
That's right. Next one. Ed O'Neill voiced Mr. Litwack in this Disney
David.
David.
Wreck-It Ralph.
That's right. Next one. Dominic West plays the character of Lead Elf in this 2011 animated movie about Santa's
Aaron.
Son. Aaron.
Arthur Christmas?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right.
Wow. I was afraid it was going to be like a strange magic answer. I'm like, what?
Strange magic answer?
But that didn't come out in 2011.
No.
Remember that movie?
I don't remember that movie. I'm going to have to look it up.
Lucasfilm animated movie.
Strange magic?
Yeah.
All right, I'll look it up.
It came out last year in January. It bombed. George Lucas said sorry, and then we all moved on with our lives.
I kind of like it.
That's probably why I don't remember it.
I kind of like it.
Next one here. Ellen DeGeneres voices Prologue Dog in this 1998 Eddie Murphy movie about a vet who can talk to animals.
Aaron. Dr. Doolittle again?
Yeah, that's correct.
I was going like, that's Dr. Doolittle, but we already gave that answer.
Last one here. This might be the most obscure one. Diane Keaton voices Daphne in this 1993 movie about
Aaron.
Talking Aaron.
Look who's talking now.
Let me double check that title of the movie.
It's
that's
not,
correct.
Yes,
yes.
I know. It's the dog one. It's look,
yeah,
who's
look who's talking now. Because I had to make sure. That was a tight race. In the end, Aaron, you came out 1 point ahead of David.
Once again, John Travolta and Kirstie Alley saved my life.
Ain't it cool?
That's many times that you can say that in your, you know, ever.
Ain't it cool? Thank you, David.
So that was Lend Me Your Voice.
All right. Thank you for that game, Abe.
Yeah.
Let's move on now. Let's get to Out Now Presents What's Out Now. These are movies that are hitting on Blu-ray DVD this week. And I got a few here. First up is Midnight Special.
Yes, go see it.
Yeah, sure. It's one of my favorites of the year. Then we have Knight of Cups. This is the new Terrence Malick film with Christian Bale.
Reviews on it.
Yeah, it's if you're more into this period of Malick, where it's a lot of pondering and wandering and aimlessness, then you'll maybe enjoy something out of this one.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have The Brothers Grimsby. So
Abe, last week
you talked about this movie.
Right.
This week I saw it on a Blu-ray for review. It is awful. It is an awful
thing. You gave it an awful. All right.
It is awful.
Yeah. Did you also have the same question I had? Why did Mark Strong choose this?
Yeah, constantly.
Okay. Constantly.
Next up is My Big Fat Greek Wedding 2, Wedding Harder.
I heard that it was
Yeah, I have no, I didn't see it. Okay. So. Then we have The Wave. This is a Norwegian disaster film, which is quite good. I enjoyed this movie. It's very, it tries to echo what American disaster movies do, but in Norway, and it's good looking for sure.
That's the one where they're at the ski camp and there's the avalanche, is it?
No, that's a different movie. And there's different things that's not a disaster movie. That's force majeure.
That's like a dark comedy, right?
Yes, there's different things that go on in that movie.
Okay.
Then we got some Scream Factory releases here: The Crush with Alicia Silverstone and Roller Coaster, which is an old film about a person planting bombs on roller coasters.
That sounds like Bon Voyage.
Yep, pretty much. Yes, it's the plot of Bon Voyage in a movie. And then lastly, on Criterion this week, we have Fantastic Planet, which is a neat film for sure. Just your Criterion update there. Okay, that's enough. That's what's on now. Let's go on to Extremely Cool. These are things now on Netflix that we can recommend here. First up, the new season of Orange is the New Black is now on Netflix. And let's see, later this week, actually by the time this recording, Spotlight arrives on Netflix.
Yes, nice.
Best picture winner. So if you've seen Spotlight already, you can now catch it on Netflix streaming. All right, moving on now. Next week's show. Next week, we are talking Independence Day: Resurgence.
I've heard that you guys aren't going to get a press screener for this.
The screenings are not being held until the day of release, which is very odd.
That never really sends a good message.
It doesn't send a good message. That being said, though, Fox screened X-Men a month in advance. So it's like, now it just seems like they don't know what the hell to do with their movies. If you screen something way in advance, you think, okay, that should be good. And we did not like X-Men. And then you have Independence Day coming out way late. I'm not saying that means it's going to be great, but it's like, maybe they just don't have confidence in what they're doing after that, those shenanigans with X-Men.
I hope people still go see it, because I put it as my number one movie for the summer.
Yep, you really gotta count on that. Meanwhile, Dory made $137 million this weekend, making a record for Pixar.
And Civil War has made over $400 million.
Yeah, over time.
Oh, yeah.
This is one weekend for Dory, and it has a whole summer to go.
Ooh, boy.
So we'll see where that goes as far as summer gamble is concerned. But yeah, let's move on. Last thing here, what should people go and see now, and what do you plan to see next? Abe, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
You should definitely go see, if you can still catch Nice Guys, go catch Nice Guys. Otherwise, Finding Dory is a very, very good pick as well. And next, Independence Day, Resurgence.
David, what should people go and see in theaters right now?
Definitely Finding Dory.
What are you going to see next?
I'm really behind, so I'm going to try and see X-Men still.
Mm-hmm.
and Out of the Shadows, because I still haven't seen that.
Oh, yeah. That's fun. Okay. We like that Turtles movie. Let's see. Nice Guy is a good call, Abe. I'm still saying The Lobster and Finding Dory are good picks.
Cool.
This weekend, in addition to Independence Day, eventually, I am seeing Woody Allen's new film, Cafe Society, and on the same day, I'm seeing Todd Solondz's new film, Wiener Dog. So I got a couple comedies coming my way before I get to...
Wiener Dog doesn't look like an outright comedy. It looks like a very strange, quirky movie.
I just saw Swiss Army Man. I'm right there.
All right, that's a good point.
And with that being said, that's going to do it for this week's episode for Out Now, Aaron and Abe. You can find more of my work on my personal blog, thecodeofzeke.com. You can find my movie reviews there. And starting this week, actually, you can find me writing some articles for ScreenRant.com. And you can also find me on Twitter at @AaronsPS4. Abe?
You can find more fun stuff over at walrusmoose.blogspot.com or twitter.com/walrusmoose, # what? That's a Central Intelligence reference.
David, where can people find more of your work?
You can find me on EndorExpress.net, where I write about theme park stuff. My most recent thing was the Frozen live musical at Disneyland, and I'll be making a trip to Shanghai Disneyland and Hong Kong Disneyland next week, so expect reports from there in the future.
I'm really excited. I want to know how busy it is or how unbusy it is.
I want to know what the audience is going to be like for Turtles in Shanghai.
Well, they'll be out of the shadows.
Okay.
Ba-dum-ts.
You can find all the other episodes about Now with Aaron and Abe over on iTunes as well as on Audioboom.
You can listen to our episodes over at SoundCloud, HX Ability, or Podomatic.
You can feel free to email us any thoughts that you've had on the movies we talked about this week over at outnowpodcast@gmail.com.
Answer our questions or ask them over at facebook.com/outnowpodcast, or you can tweet us at twitter.com/outnow_podcast.
And, of course, there's our Tumblr page, outnowpodcast.tumblr.com, where we welcome anything.
Anything. Anything.
David, thank you very much for joining us today.
Thank you, David.
Oh, thank you guys for having me.
Thank you, Anna, for her thoughts on Piper and the short films over there.
Thank you, Anna.
Welcome. Thank you for having me.
For sure. you can find us talking next week about the end of the world again as we know it, and we still feel fine, perhaps? Resurgence? But until next time, that's going to do it. So long.
And goodbye.
Somewhere beyond the sea, somewhere waiting for me, my lover stands on golden sands and watches the ships that go sailing. Somewhere beyond the sea, I could fly like birds on high, then straight to her arms I'd go sailing.
I'm pretty sure Albert Brooks is probably like, "We gotta go after Dory."
In that voice.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Stewart. That's what he's doing. Dory's out there, guys. We gotta get her.
That's a deep blue sea.
I don't know what to do. Who is Sigourney Weaver?
Now it's becoming Don Knotts.
Yes, yeah, it tends to if I do it too long.